Welcome to Beyond Leading, the podcast that cuts through the noise to get real about leadership, team dynamics, personal growth, and the messy, brilliant reality of work, life, and everything in between. Each episode brings grounded insights, sharp truths, and honest conversations with experienced leaders and coaches as we explore what it really takes to lead well today. We don't deal in one-size-fits-all answers. We spark ideas, offer grounded perspectives, and create space for you to work out what fits your world. So let's get into it. Today, Nick Sellers and I, Alec Pearson, are joined by Gemma Dore, founder of Lake District Relocation, a buying agency based in Cumbria that she launched in September 2020, right in the middle of COVID. Gemma didn't so much take the leap as find herself pushed into it. Redundancy, uncertainty, and a moment of decision. And she's turned that into a business built on trust, clear thinking, and a deep feel for the Lake District market. We talk about credibility, focus, and how you stay clear-headed through the ups and downs. So Gemma, welcome to the podcast. And the question I'm dying to know at this early stage is that you started Lake District Relocation Limited in September 2020 at a time when many businesses were struggling. What motivated you to take the leap, and how did you navigate the early challenges?
I wouldn't say it was necessarily motivated to take the leap. I was kind of kicked off a cliff. It's probably the best way of putting it. I've been in a state agency for a decade before I opened the business. And COVID was a difficult time. Nobody knew what was going to happen. There was a lot of uncertainty. And because of that, I became made redundant. But I actually had the idea for this business about 4 years before I actually did it. And it was just a combination of confidence, where I was in my life. I just didn't feel like all those things were joining together at the time. And then suddenly I lost my job, and suddenly I had some money that I never had before. And I thought, well, actually, this money was never mine. So let's throw it into something, give it my all and see what happens. What I didn't know that was going to happen was that I was going to get thrown into the stratosphere of what then became COVID. Mm-hmm. And today, nearly five years on, here I am, basically. So it was a weird time. There was a lot of things to navigate. There was a lot of restrictions in place with people. There was a lot of uncertainty that I had to navigate. But how I found my way through that was actually, it was customer service and customer experience and talking to people. And I think understanding what my client is the buyer, not the seller. So I'm a buying agent. I'm on the opposite side of transactions. And it was talking to those individuals and understanding what their fears were, what were the obstacles that they needed to overcome, because that has changed from then to what it is now. It's a different obstacle. And just understanding the business world at that time, everybody was willing to lift me up, and the community in the Lake District really pushed me forwards. You know, they were all delighted at that time to see somebody attempting something new. And the business community is very strong in this area. And yeah, I feel like they've carried me over that first year of business. So yeah, and here I am.
You mentioned there's something new. They carried you, something new. What was the USP, unique selling point, do you think?
Buying agents are not, there's not many buying agents in the north of the country. It's a difficult terrain to cover. The attitudes are very different north to south. And so whilst there are a lot of buying agents all over the world, there weren't necessarily a lot of people doing that in this. Everybody says there's hard work, there's having a great idea, but there's also an element of luck and timing. And luck and timing really came into this hugely. And then once I was able to establish myself, that obviously then it has carried me through.
Who typically are you working on behalf of? I know it's buyers, but are these people who are already in the area, people moving into the area, maybe people coming from abroad to move into the area? Who's your classic client?
My clients come from all over the place, in all honesty. So we get international clients who are moving back to the UK. Also work with people who are local, who are really struggling to move. I'm to Phil and Kirsty. Kirsty Allsop and Phil Spencer a lot of the time. If you think they support that individual such a close level, so it really, the clients come from all over the place. It's people who might need the hands holding, really, in all honesty. Or you're trying to bridge the gap between them and wherever they are in the world. And because I only cover a small area, which was a conscious choice, means that I can be completely absorbed in that market, what's going on. I'm not covering a huge area like some others do. I cover that area. And because I'm part of the community, it means that I live and breathe it every single day.
That program that you mentioned there, how often I've seen it, watched it, and the brief that they receive from a client turns out to be not really the brief that they ought to have received. How much work do you need to do with your clients to get them to where they truly, really want to be?
So we always laugh about this in the industry. So I'm part counsellor, part psychologist, really, and strategist. That's part of my job, actually. So estate agents get the credit they're really due because there is a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes that people don't actually know is even happening. Sometimes, you know, people come to me, been looking for a house for 2 years, find what I'm looking for. You've viewed too many houses. You've gone down a rabbit hole. And so sometimes my job is actually to pull people back. It's to understand where they are in their life. There's no point in sending them to the back end of nowhere and beyond if they need a hospital in the next year, or, you know, they've got a regular condition that they need to be seen by. So, I mean, it gets really personal and they have to trust me. And that's a big thing in our industry. It's trust. So getting to know the individual and knowing where they actually need to go, you know, what are they coming to work here? And if they're coming to work here, where, how often do they need to get to? Where do they need to get to? And just really getting into all the little difficult conversations and then steering them. Sometimes I'm known for throwing curveballs at people. We secured a house a few weeks ago, something that they'd scrolled past on Rightmove a number of times. But it's sometimes somebody steering you back towards it and then saying, right, if we knock this ball down and we did this and we did that, it would actually work for you. And then the penny drops.
You know, I think you've just described perfectly the role of an executive coach, because the work that a coach does is very often finding out where the client is now, where they want to be at a point in time, and then the things that are getting in the way of how they think. And so I think you've got a set of skills there that are perfectly transferable.
And you do speak to a lot of people actually in the property industry, and you find that they've come from all sorts of different backgrounds. And you're quite right. It is very transferable. Yeah.
You talk there about taking walls down and doing this. What kind of appetite do clients have? Or are they looking to just move into their dream home without that need for major work to be done?
So I would say if you asked everyone, they'd go, we want the perfect house done and we want to move in, no problems. But it doesn't work like that. And we all know there's always a compromise. And it's also assessing what someone's risk levels are. So a part of my job is to say, okay, if you're going to spend X amount of money on this house, you're in an area where actually the house prices are fairly protected and therefore you're probably going to be okay. Or I would be saying, no, I wouldn't spend that much money in this particular area. Let's go and look somewhere else. So there's that side of it as well. But I would say most people in that ideal world, number one is to find something that is done, ready to move into. But the reality is that doesn't exist in most people's searches. So to actually go in and knock a wall down, if it makes that house right for you, it's worth the bit of pain you have to go through to make it happen.
And I think, again, you've just described another aspect of coaching. Beautiful. Thank you very much.
You mentioned earlier the strategist as part of your job. Looking at your own business, and again, I'm just thinking here around credibility. What strategies did you implement to establish credibility, to get that trust that people would come to you and think, yeah, Gemma's what I need?
So that was a huge commitment that I had to make right at the very beginning and be consistent with it to even to this day. And it's about educating the public to what's going on behind the scenes. Now, I think obviously where I come in, I'm giving it from the buyer's perspective, which not everybody gets to hear. So that's really breaking things down. I'm dealing with the market all the time and giving a different perspective to what's going out there. Sometimes that's coupled with statistics. Sometimes it's not. But it's deciphering things that are happening in Westminster and saying, right, this is, you know, this is what's happening and this is what the potential impact could be from my point of view. In the first part of the business, it was about making sure that I was consistent with the messaging. And it was really important for me to actually put my opinion out there as a professional. And obviously, because I'm working on the opposite side of transactions, it was a different perspective that maybe people weren't hearing all the time. So part of my role is to sort of take to pieces potential government legislation that's coming in. And obviously to give my professional opinion on that. Now, not everybody's opinions are the same, but obviously when you're gathering information, it's good to hear these things. So that wasn't something that was necessarily out there in the area at the time. It was out there from estate agency experience, but not from the buyer's perspective. So actually, you know, we'll put status and statistics out there for people, but also just talk about how the market feels. And also talk about the obstacles that people have and just putting that professional opinion out there. And I must admit, when I'm sat in people's living rooms, they do sort of sit and go, yeah, what you've said makes a lot of sense. So I think it was just the consistency of making sure that there was a message being put out there and obviously that you knew what you were talking about and pointing them to what you felt. We've got a lot of government legislation out there at the moment of potential things that could happen. And then it's making a comment on what potentially that might mean for the market moving forwards. So we've had a lot of government changes, a lot of budgets and things like that. So yeah. People have really been searching for that professional opinion. So yeah, it's just sticking your head above the parapet and making sure that people know who you are.
So it sounds like an extremely busy role you're in because you've got all that background work to do. You've got to keep up to date with what's happening externally. Also within the market, and then you're dealing with your clients. Poof, a lot there, but at least on then, if you think about the past 5 years, has there been any key milestones that you've reached and went, yeah, this feels good. This is exactly where I wanted the business to go.
Yeah, so I think in my world, as you'll know, the property market goes up and down and all sorts of things happen. It's a bit like business, isn't it? It's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to pivot. And that's one thing that I have actually learned. I set targets for myself every year, as you should. And, you know, I think that rewarding myself when we'd actually hit certain targets was something that I did. And I felt that that was important. I've probably become a bit lax on that lately. But I think that the beginning, that was definitely something that I did. But yes, I think it can be really difficult to stay in your own lane, if you know what I mean. It's easy to get diverted down different lanes, but you also need to not be so fixed in your mindset that you're not willing to kind of deviate slightly to keep things going.
Was there ever a battle between passion, as in, no, that's what I want to do, that's what I am going to do, versus reality? Actually, as you mentioned there, that pivot, I have to pivot. Or I can't grow, and that's not what I thought, it's not what I wanted, but I've got to be realistic.
Yeah, in the very, very early days of the business, there was a demand and an opportunity, let's say, for me to have an additional service within the company. And it was something I was really passionate about. But I quickly worked out that it was taking up far too much of my time. And strategically, it was a really bad business move, but I made it and I made the error. But I corrected the error very quickly. And I think going through this process, there's been a few things that have happened. You know, we all have negative experiences that then mean actually we stay on course or we maybe ask a few more questions to make sure we don't make that error in the future. And I think that every good, bad, and ugly experience is sort of giving you the legs to take the next move. So I've a lot of that.
You're a source of information, knowledge, insight, observation, experience. Have you found over the 5 years or so that you've been in business that you've narrowed down the scope of what you do share with clients, or have you broadened the scope? How has that worked out for you, or are you just doing the same as when you started out?
No, the business is different from how we started out. The sort of main parts of it are, but again, the property market will change in the next 5 years again. And it's knowing that the business has got to be sustainable, and we've got to work out how it survives. Things have changed a lot in the 5 years I've been in the business as well. So yeah, it's a tough one. And I think it's on an individual basis. And sometimes demand throws you down a certain direction. And that has been something that obviously has happened to me a few times. The demand on me has meant that actually we need to look at doing something differently, or what can we offer to satisfy what we're being asked for. So, yeah, I think that's ever evolving, in all honesty.
So as things kind of ebb and flow, I suppose, if to use that tidal kind of analogy, as things ebb and flow, you've gone with the flow.
Sometimes I've held back, if I'm honest. There have been times where opportunities have revealed themselves and I've had to firmly stick in my lane and say, stop looking that way. You need to focus on what you're doing. And I think that happens to a lot of business owners, this set, and you'll hear this a lot. But it's very easy to get distracted by other opportunities. So there are times where I've had to sort of clip my wings a little bit and say, no, you need to stay with what you're doing. And I think that's important. But again, you've got to have the mindset, I think, enough to explore options, but, you know, have enough research behind you and gut instinct, I suppose, to know to take things, which I sound like I'm talking in riddles when I say that, but I think most business owners would probably know.
I think what you say is well made. I think sometimes things that look like they're opportunities are actually just bright, shiny objects that are a distraction. And actually a part of being in business is to know the difference between distractions and opportunities.
Yeah.
And I think you've outlined that very well there. Thank you.
From what you were saying there, Jim, it leads on to time management and managing your time. Focus to think what I need to do. How do you find the whole process of time management as a business owner?
So when we've been a micro business, which I would class myself as a micro business growing, let's say, it's really tough. Because there's no consistency in the market, particularly at the moment. And over the last year, we've had, you know, government decisions and external influences can cap the amount of work that's coming in. And you're sort of twiddling your thumbs thinking, right, I need to get out there and create work, to the point where then you're overwhelmed with people coming back to you and can't cope with it. Mm-hmm. But the problem is because of the inconsistency at times, particularly over the last year, that does make it very, very difficult. But I, you know, at an early stage, got people in to help me in certain areas of the business so that I could, when it was busy, rely on somebody else to take the reins slightly. And again, you learn by your mistakes. You learn, I need a holiday. I need to switch off. I don't want to answer that phone. I've had many holidays ruined, but I've had many holidays. Then when I've learned what to do and how to do it and to get it right, then I've gone, oh my God, why didn't I do this sooner?
Because kind of leads on to work-life balance, which is a key, not just for business owners, but generally many of us that are full-time employed. You know, there's issues with burnout, with just not getting that downtime. In the 5 years of your business, do you feel there was a time where actually I'm starting to get on top of work-life balance? I'm just thinking what you said there, you're starting to control time, you can remembering I need time off. Was there a particular moment in the past 5 years that you thought, yeah, I'm getting there with this now, it's starting to come together?
Yeah. Do you know, I think you go through stages when you've got a business, don't you? Because you've got the determination and the drive at the beginning that gets you through. But there does become a point where you hit a brick wall slightly and you think, gosh, I could be described as burnout. But you've got something that's driving you at the beginning. I think it becomes much harder when you sort of hit those later years. And this is, I think, completely the reason why in having an external influence by a coach there to sort of hold your hands and actually unpick everything. And go, right, what next? how do we deal with this? And I do find that that's a key thing. I mean, I hit a wall a few times, but equally, I've also, like you say, gone, I'm superwoman today and we've managed to do this and it's fantastic and I'm really happy with how things are going. But the one thing I have learned is you do really need to actually look at the good and celebrate the success. I think it's so easy to focus on the negatives. And yeah. We all just naturally do that as humans. I think it's particularly in this world of social media and looking at other people's lives, it's really easy to look at all the nice shiny bits that are out there and then feel awful yourself when actually just you need to sit back and go, 5 years this year, that's a pretty good, you know, most businesses don't make it to that if you look at the stats. So, you know, that was always a big aim for me, was to make sure that I got to this point.
Nicely put. And you talked about experiences there. Somebody that Alec and I both know said, you know, the truth is that we don't learn from experience. We learn from reflecting on our experiences. And I think therein lies a lot of truth. If we experience something and don't learn from it, there's a risk that we go on and repeat the thing again yeah. and maybe again. They've not really reflected. They've not really learned. They just said it.
In terms of building a network, what advice would you give to other entrepreneurs about networking, relationship building for their particular industry or sector? Is anything that you have learned over the past 5 years and you're thinking, actually, this works. This is the kind of thing I need to do to keep that strong network.
I think that you need to put yourself out there, don't you? As uncomfortable as networking is, and some people don't like it. I had that conversation a few days ago, actually. Networking is uncomfortable for some people and they don't like it. It is something that is worth doing. And you've just got to find your place. And it depends what industry you're in as well. So some industries, having a firm commitment to one singular group is a real benefit. And to others, it's going to lots of different groups. And it depends on you as an individual. Do you feel you need some more support? And I think some groups offer opportunity for learning, don't they? And you come away with something that you can actually put into practice, and that's quite useful. I quite like that. But it just depends where you are in the world as well, doesn't it? Because I think some places do networking and have more opportunities for networking. And I think you've just got to find your place and not to be worried if you go into a room and it doesn't quite feel right. You have to keep trying it a few times. But if it doesn't work, then get on to the next thing. Don't stay there for too long. Move on, you know. But yeah, I think also keeping in touch with and making connections with people who are in the same industry as you. Now, again, it depends what industry you're in. That is quite difficult in an estate agency. Estate agency has always been fairly competitive. So you don't tend to find people like to work closely with each other. But actually, when you look at the whole of the UK, there's an opportunity to do that because you're not direct competitors. And then finding, you know, focus groups and things like that where people can swap issues and overcome problems, I think that's key. But going back to your initial question, I think going to networking events is really, really important to put yourself out there and create a network for yourself.
Typically, what I hear from many business owners is, actually, to network, it's a hard thing for quite a few of us. But actually, the other thing I see over and over again is having that perseverance, having that patience, because people you might meet, for example, this month, it might take 6, 9, 12 months before any work or collaboration might actually happen. And yeah. I do see a lot of business owners, they expect to meet someone and get business that day. But typically, it's not how it works.
No, and I know that at many of the groups where they say, right, you need to go and have a conversation with this person or that person, I do think it needs to be an organic relationship that grows over time, like you've just said, because it's then a trust thing. You're only going to refer work to someone who you trust, and you're never going to build trust in one meeting for 2 hours. So I think it is, it's commitment over a period of time, but we are in a bit of a time-poor society. And that's where I think people struggle. It's getting that schedule right.
Alec, you came in with a question about time management, and Gemma has just commented on being time poor. But isn't the use of our time a choice that we have? And how do we reconcile that management and the use of time to maximise or optimise the outcome from use of time?
I think actually it's dissecting what you're actually doing. Now, I should take my own advice here. If you look at, right, what's a pound job? What's a thousand pound job? What should I be doing, or what should somebody else be doing? And that is something, again, that I've had to learn, really, is that I can't do everything. So what is best to be given to somebody else? What am I awful at? What do I need help with? And give that to someone who is much better at it than me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're creating an all-round better experience for everybody involved. And also my time management becomes better. So I didn't think it's... But just having, you know, a real close look at what is it you're actually doing on a day-to-day basis? And are you wasting your time? Don't pick up your phones. Don't start scrolling and realising you've just lost an hour looking at what other people are doing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is a real big trap that a lot of people in fledgling businesses do. I think, you know, going through, even if you're an executive of a company that's been going for a while, I think having a time audit is a really good thing to do. And also starting to put procedures in place for those tasks so that you can hand that over to somebody else.
On the topic of delegation, not only are you making better use of your own time, but you're also helping develop the skills of the people that you delegate to as well. So it should really be a win-win for everybody, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you're also like empowering employees within the business to feel more involved. And I think that's a key thing, particularly when you're all trying to be part of something that is growing.
What's one piece of advice you'd give to someone who's looking to start their own business today?
So it's probably the same answer that I would have given 12 months into the business.
Okay.
And that is that just do it. Because I do think the amount of startups that I've spoken to over the period I've been doing this, and they have not taken that leap, or they've procrastinated over small decisions that are really, really minor in the end. So I remember years ago, I spoke to a gentleman who had an amazing idea, and he was not willing to press the button on his idea because he was trying to come up with the internet web address. And I said, do you know how insignificant the web address is? If you've got the name of the company already, that is insignificant, really, because it's the text and everything else that goes into it. And I think we can get hung up on these things. And sometimes, when if it's not 100%, you should just put it out there, because if you find in the end, we're there to analyse what we've done wrong, make it better. But if you don't do it, then no one's ever going to, you know, you're just going to hold yourself back, which is what I did for 4 years before I launched my business.
The point you raised there is really interesting, because you think about, you know, many of us in the workplace or budding business owners, it's typically that perfectionism that drives the procrastination. So we just don't end up doing it. There might well be fear. And actually, sometimes is a fear based on fact, or is it based on our assumptions and our interpretations, which some might argue are typically wrong, because we typically want to think the worst thing that can happen, when a lot of the times that's not what actually happens.
Yeah, and I think we also live in a world, just going back to social media, that dominates. We've got so many eyes on us now, and we know that. And I think it's really easy to be so worried about what other people will think. And I think that is something that you hear a lot. If you listen to people talking, that is a real problem for a lot of people. Actually, sometimes you've just got to do it. And then you'll be very surprised at the support you get.
Mm-hmm.
And the negative, which we all focus on, isn't as bad as you think it's going to be.
Yeah. Couple of final questions then. As an entrepreneur, what other habits or mindset shifts have been most important for your success?
Habits. Consistency. To be consistent with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Mindset shift. I'm being negative now when I'm saying this, but I think negativity is so easy to slip into.
Mm.
So it's trying to just stop that and get back on track and make sure that you're looking at the positives. Because I just think in society in general, it's so easy we fall into that really, really easily. And I think you've just got to pull yourself back sometimes.
So leading on from that, if you could go back and be your pre-2020 self,
What one piece of advice would you give yourself if you were to start your business now?
That's a tough one, because I don't think we'd end up where we were if we hadn't had the journey we've had. And I'm sure people say that. Yeah, because it's the good, the bad, the ugly, the highs, the lows, everything that contribute to where you are now. And you've got to make mistakes to be able to move forwards, but you've also got to have the successes to know what works. So I maybe would have kicked myself to have done it a bit sooner and not have been as worried about taking the leap. It's been hard work and determination. And I had that 4 years ago, but I just didn't know how to unlock it, I think. So, yeah.
And if I might add, I think over the years, there have been so many people who I know who have successfully set up a business, scaled it, moved it, and they've said, I wish I'd started sooner. It took something like redundancy or another significant life event to propel them into that mode where they actually thought, I'll give it a go. And then they've turned out to be very successful. So I think your point, Gemma, is very, very well made. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I hope it helps some more.
Thank you so much for your time today. And finally, where can people find you if they're interested in working with you or learning about more about what you do?
So I'm on all the social media channels. So you can find Lake District Relocation on Facebook and Instagram. And you can get a deep dive into stats and the bits and pieces doing the business on LinkedIn as well. And we have a website, which is all the W's, lakedistrictrelocation.com.
Brilliant. Gemma, thank you very much indeed. And good luck. And looking forward to seeing your business continuing to grow.
Thank you. Speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Leading. If this episode was useful, follow or subscribe so you don't miss the next one, and share it with someone who'd appreciate it. And if you've got a minute, a quick rating or review really helps more people find the show.